So what I'll be talking about today is basically how to deform these queer theories. Okay. So there's been a number of talks on these queer theories, and essentially what we have learned, I think so far, is that there's a more or less a concrete algorithm to compute the gauge theory, and that means so basically for queers or gauge theories that are that come out of putting some number of D3 brains in a singularity, we have what I've been explaining here is essentially how to get the gauge group, the matter content, and superpotential, which more or less describes the theory completely. And interestingly, there have been also ways to compute R charges and relate that to gravity. Okay, let me put it like that. So this is, of course, very impressive and very interesting, but we would like to, but all the theories are, of course, conformal so far, right? Or mainly conformal. Okay. So what we would like to do is to go beyond that and try to study theories that are not necessarily conformal, that have some kind of a scale. And this is, of course, there's an obvious motivation to do this. It's related to more phenomenologically interesting theories, QCD, etc. We always have a scale, and we would like to understand that better. So I want to say that in this in that direction, there are two particularly nice solutions that have been obtained. So this Kleonov-Strassler solution and Maldacena-Nunez. So the important thing is that by having some explicit form of these backgrounds, one can do a lot of computations. And I will enumerate some of them. So you can compute Wilson loop, show confinement, and at that level, and compute, for example, the string tensions very explicitly. Okay, so this is a calculation, again, that uses the metric very explicitly. You can compute other things in the spectrum of the theories. In particular, you can learn about baryons, mesons, then you can put probe brains, etc. And so what else? You can study also Ragy trajectories for open for blue balls and also for mesons. There's no problem here. And study a number of other things: chiral symmetry breaking, Gluino condensate, etc. So there's a plethora of infrared dynamics that we can essentially access by having an explicit supergravity background that describes the theories. So I want to make a couple of remarks about you know, the price we pay by going into these perhaps more interesting aspects. So here, of course, so we can compute things and we can do explicit checks. Okay, and in the case of n=4, you can completely independently compute in the gauge theory side as well as the gravity side and compare. So, which makes working here very rewarding and very interesting. Okay. So unfortunately here we don't have, in the majority of cases, we don't have an independent way to check what we have. But one thing that we've been doing that has been taking place recently is that we can qualitatively make a very good contact with things that are understood in infrared dynamics. These are a number of things that I listed, but there are more and even more specific, like eta prime masses and things like that are very subtle infrared effects in QCD that now can be reproduced using these theories. So basically, this is kind of a motivation to try now and see how can we deform this class of theories more generically, not these two specific ones. But so a lot has been said about this Asagi Einstein spaces, and they give you an infinite family of conformal theory. So we would like to basically, that's sort of the goal, understand how one can deform the theories into something that will resemble more a confining theory. So to answer this question of what are the possible deformations that we can have that will lead to something resembling a confining theory, let me start by reminding you some of the properties of these solutions. So we can, so to construct the supergravity solution for the DC brain, essentially we have a very general way to do so. So we can, so we have a metric, okay, which we write of the in this language. So you have Poincaré invariance in the word volume of your gauge theory, and then some six-dimensional space here, which is transverse to the D3 brain. You need also a five-form field, which would be essentially something like this, Hodge dual, dh minus 1, dx0, dx3. Okay. So this is the standard answers for D3 brain, and then the equation of motions tell you that the Ricci tensor of this six-dimensional space, so let me write it in, has to be zero, and then H solve the Laplace equation also in this six-dimensional space. Okay. So essentially, for any Ricci flat space, I can put D3 brains there in a very consistent way, and everything boils down to checking that the six-dimensional space is Ricci flat, and then solve an equation for H. Of course, if you're interested in supersymmetry or something like that, you might want a little bit more, and that this space would be a Calabi-Yau in that case. Okay. So what happens, so this is the general situation, and one particular class of these solutions that have been studied a lot, and that is essentially what have been discussed in this study group for the last 2-3 weeks, is the case where this six-dimensional metric is a cone, okay, over some five-dimensional space, which, you know, in this concrete case has been some Sasaki-Einstein space. Okay. Again, you by this construction, you're guaranteed that this is Ricci flat. It's even more some Calabi-Yau, and you have seen the explicit toric realization of this space. And you will get that H, or this word factor, is essentially R to the 4 divided by R to the 4, and I'm already taking the near horizon limit, and what you end up with is basically a space that is ADS5 times some five-dimensional space, which is this base. This is what have been discussed here, and as you can see, so the explicit presence of this ADS5 factor tells you that the field theory is conformal. Okay, so how do we move away from there? So there are a number of things that one can do, and I will try to explore a couple of those in this talk. So one natural thing, and which indeed has been done, is to, so you can change. So if you remember all the quiver diagrams that were discussed here before, they all have the same rank. So you can change the rank of some of the groups in the quiver. So for example, you had some. There's a specific prescription for doing this. I don't want to give you the impression that you can just change it. But roughly, you change the rank of some of the gauge groups in the quiver. It's a number here. Okay. And that will unbalance the beta functions, and therefore there will be some running of couplings, and the theory will move away from conformality. That's one way. Let's explore that a little bit more. So what does this mean from the gravity point of view? is that we basically turn on some flux. And more particularly, what you want to do is you take the complex tree form, which is the NSNS tree form and the RR tree form, complexify, and so you make it proportional to M, and then you basically you try to introduce this into the background. Okay, so I'm being very sketchy. I could be, but you might remember. So this for me is the when you write this Asagi-Einstein, usually we were doing something like this, plus the base, which was Keller-Einstein. Okay, so this is, so I call this Ipsi. Okay, this is Ipsi. So basically you turn on some flux, and that will, as I said, that essentially changes the rank of some of the gauge groups. But unfortunately, okay, this, if you want to find a completely back reactive solution of the metric, what you find is that this induces some singularities in the metric. In particular, you have some naked singularities. So one way to see that is that essentially the solution for H now will be roughly what it was before, but then it will have some factor that is of this type, more or less. Okay, and you can see that for some R, which is basically N over M, so very small, for some very small value, this work factor will become zero, and you can see that you will have a singularity degeneration. You can compute it very explicitly, and this is a repulsive type of singularity, and this has been studied and it's understood, but essentially this is what happens if you just turn on some flux.
Why did you say it is small? So n is large.
So right. So we are always working in the Larsen limit. So to have a
capital M is small.
Capital M is arbitrary, right? So but n is large. So so that the supergravity solution is valid. Okay. Right. So this is the generic situation. So now the natural question. The natural question is basically how can we regularize this theory? So what is the natural thing that we can do to have a theory with flux so that we have a non-conformal theory, but also avoid this kind of naked singularity? So the natural thing, there's a very intuitive answer to this, and so you have to blow up some three cycle. And the reason is very clear. So here we have, if I integrate this, I will have some flux, which is M, on some three cycle, which is determined by this. Generically, because this metric was some cone over this base, was written in this language, that means that for very small r, the volume of that cycle goes to zero. So if you have constant flux along something that is going to zero, you will naturally have some singularity. So this is essentially the answer to, or a way to see that this is what you need to do. Okay. There is, of course, some, we have to, so there's a field theory field theory answer that to the same question. So this is a more or less a very intuitive way to see how you need to modify the geometry, but there's a field theory answer to this question. I think that there will be talks about precisely how to rigorously understand the field theory such that you are led to the conclusion that you need to do a complex deformation of the space you started with. But roughly, let me just say two ingredients. So you want to study here, you look at the moduli space of some prop D3 brain. And there's some non-perturbative effect that is given by the Affleck-Dein-Seiber superpotential. So the sum of these two ingredients basically tells you that you need to deform the space. Okay.
So is there always such deformation of the Karabiyawa?
That deformation might not exist. So there might be cases where the deformation doesn't exist. I think there will be some discussion about that here as well. Also, there's a mathematical literature about that, and there are many papers for the case of toric Calabi-Yau's where the deformation are studied.
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's somewhat before that. G3 has a really important imaginary part.
Right.
And one of them is non-compact.
Yes.
So when you integrate, you mean that you integrate about the
compact part, yes.
And you just ignore the non-compact part?
Okay, so again, so what happened here is, so I read it like this. So this is the Ramon-Ramon, the Neuwirth-Schwarz III form. There's some GS here that I will not write, but roughly like this. So this is, of course, some B-field. But concretely, for what I'm interested in this concrete setup, that I know I need some D5 brain, the form that I'm interested is this one. So when I integrate, I get the number of D5 brains, and this is what I'm after.
Yeah. So the B field itself is interpreted as some gauge coupling. H field, does it have any interpretation?
Not that I know.
It's not well defined. Is it? H will diverge?
So let me. So you can see from here. So H. So you have B is essentially log of R this omega 2. Okay.
So H will go like 1 over R.
Right. No, H is of course here. I don't. So now you want to integrate for all R, or what is it then? It's not very clear.
Omega 2 is defined on the base?
Yes, yeah.
On the Keller-Einstein?
Yes, on the Keller-Einstein base. Yeah.
Okay.
And so
I just need it to be closed, that's all.
So
yes?
There's nothing more further that you can say about this?
No. Yeah.
Is there some reason why you know that the blowing up free cycles from the gravity side can always be it corresponds to an ADS type superpotential on the field theory side? Is there other ways? There are other affirmations you can make to the superpotential that aren't of ADS, the ADS type? And I'm just wondering why that's always the one that you expect.
No, I just okay. So I basically. There is no logic other than these are the possibilities. So I can study the cascade of cyber dualities here, and I more or less know that generically at the end I'll get something which will generate an ADS superpotential. Right. So I'm just simply geometrically, this is what I need to have a more or less a regular solution. So it could be, of course, that these two things are not. I mean, I don't think that they are directly related. These are just two ways. What I see it is this is a following the dynamics of the system and from the field theory, and this is just trying to regularize the theory just from the geometric point of view.
But do you have something in mind?
I think that the confusion. I think that the conifold is not very generic. So in the conifold, you can show very explicitly that the moduli space of this prod D3 brain becomes the deformed conifold, even though it started from the conifold itself. But I don't think that is a true statement in general.
You said that there are other deformations.
Well, I'm thinking that something, you know, like moving away from the non-symmetric possibility or
in any case, since this theory is chiral, it's not easy to add terms to this extension. Unlike the conical case, which is chiral, which is non chiral. give us one generic indication of the
difference. Okay. So where are we? So we want to, now we need to modify the original cone in a way that it might have a free cycle. So let's look very briefly, very quickly at what we really need to do here. So as I said, the story has been evolving a little bit, but essentially, so there's a specific property of this choice that so it is imaginary self-dual, this free form. Okay, this guarantees that the dilaton doesn't run, and essentially, if you go back to the equation of motions, roughly it is still this ansatz with with this three form introduced, but essentially you still need to have a Ricci flat space. Okay, so now all I've said is that originally we had some metric, let me call it the cone, that satisfied this property, and now we're looking for something close to it that will still be Ricci flat, so that it still will solve the 2B equation of motions. Okay, and this is a standard deformation problem. What we do, if we are interested in understanding at least even the number of solutions to this kind of equation, is we linearize this. Okay, and so the linearization of the Ricci tensor with the appropriate gauge fixing gives you an equation that is essentially, maybe I can write it. Is the Lichner-Roesch operator, okay, acting on this part of the metric. Then we have two, our M. Okay, and of course, I had to pick a gauge to solve this equation. So this is essentially what we need to solve for now if we are looking for some deformation of the original cone. Interestingly, because the original problem of this, the cone over Sasaki-Einstein, was Calabi-Yau, and for which we knew, basically, we need all the complex coordinates and holomorphic three form, etc. We can, this deformation problem simplifies a lot. Okay, in particular, we'll have two kinds of solutions. So on solution, now this is, I have complex coordinates here, so I will have something that of this type, and something that can be, let's say, of this type. And of course, right? So there's an interesting, this problem of just solving this operator can be nicely formulated as a problem in understanding cohomology of these spaces. So in particular, a solution of this type to this equation will generate a closed 1,1 form like this. And if you have a solution like a solution of this type, of course, this is you can see these are 1,1 closed forms, so they generate that element of the cohomology group. And then, so if you have a solution to this Lichner-Roesch operator of this type, you can form a 2,1 form that would be closed. Okay. And this, of course, 2,1. So, but the important thing is that now we know we have a concrete way of classifying the solutions, and when we understand also that the solution that we're looking for, okay, is in this class, some complex deformation. So we know also that, of course, the Keller deformation will most likely put some kind of S2, blow up some S2, and this is not what we want. So what we want is a solution for this cone. Well, the original metric is a cone over Sasaki-Einstein. I want to find some deformations of this metric that are in this, that are classified by elements of 2,1 cohomology. Okay. So that is a little bit of we need to gather some intuition as to what is it that we precisely want to do. But then there's another element that helps, so that will help us in writing an answer for the solution that we want of this the form, and it's chiral symmetry breaking. It has been said already here several times that there's a U1 symmetry, of course, associated with the cone, and it shifts on psi, so there's a U1 symmetry, and this is related to this U1R symmetry. Okay. So if this theory is going, if we want to describe a theory that has some sort of confinement, we expect that there will be some Gluino condensate that usually generated by instanton that will break this U1R symmetry.
Okay. It will also break supersymmetry.
It will also break supersymmetry in what sense? Can you arrive at that conclusion just by looking at?
Because the R symmetry of
the supersymmetric
theory has R symmetry, which is U1. And the Levenstadt solution, is it concerned? No. U1R in the form conifold is not concerned. So that's.
Yeah. So that will be a spontaneous breaking.
Yes.
So and I guess, but when you say chiral symmetry breaking, you mean spontaneous.
Right. So I mean. Let's make that maybe I should make that clear. So whatever deformation I need will behave for very large R in the UV, if you wish, like the original solution, which is the case also for the conifold. But generically, as I move inside, the dependence is there. Okay, so in that sense, you can think that it's spontaneous. Okay, so why is this useful? Because this gives us so we have more or less an idea of what we want, but this pins down a very nice ansatz for the metric. Okay, and what you usually want to do is to have, as I said, some explicit dependence now on this coordinate, so that it is no longer a Killing vector. Although, of course, for very large R, it should approximately be a symmetry. So what you do is, so we had, so let me be precise for the PQK, for the PQK, although this is fairly generic. So what you can do here, so the metric here originally was something like this, where this is precisely this, and then some I's. Okay, I go from 1 to 4. For YPQ, again, more precisely, we have some, the coordinates are, it's I at theta phi, y and beta. Okay, people who are interested. So what we want to do, this is a U1 killing vector of the symmetry. So what we want to do is to go to some basis. So actually, okay. So I want to go to some basis in which... So let me write more or less explicitly. This is, again, I don't want to go into too much detail, but I want to also show explicitly how this works. So you want to go to some other basis in which, so 3 and 4, that you want to decide. So this, let me not write it like that. Okay. So 3 and 4 are a rotation of, let's say, E phi, E theta. Okay, and these are now your... Okay. So in general, of course, if you have only... you have just sum squared, this will not be there, which is the case far in the UV, but generically you will have products in which this is explicit dependence on psi will show up. Okay. Now you can go back and solve this Lichtenherovich equation. And so the solution that we find is something like this. So there's a function of y. It's one of the coordinates in this YPQ. And then there's okay.
This in the matrix, C and S are only function of the deformation parameter.
No, this is cosine. This is a rotation, right?
Ah, cosine
of sine. Yeah, cosine of sine. Yeah. So when you have a solution, you can now go back and answer a number of questions. So you want to understand whether this is really a supersymmetric solution. Okay. And so whether it really has SU3 holonomy. And what else? And of course, you want to be able to write it as a related to a 2,1 closed form.
What is epsilon?
Epsilon is a parameter, is like the deformation parameter.
And f of y has satisfies some
of the... Yeah, f of y is very simple. It's 1 over this.
Okay.
See? C, okay, C is one of these, so when you define this YPQ, it could be P and Q are also, they go as A and C. This is sort of the standard way to write this, this metric. They're related.
Q is equal to C? But
No, it's not there.
So it's a number?
C. Yeah.
No number?
Yeah. For the conifold, it is, of course, zero. Okay, so all these things can be checked explicitly. You have no problem. It's a bit technical, of course. So here, roughly here, what you do is still want to check you want to look at the integrability condition and make sure that the projection that is being preserved is the projection of the original cone. That we checked. Moreover, you can look at this. So you can look at the composition of. You have explicit realization of the holonomy group in terms of the curvature here, and you look at the generators, and you can also check that it has SU3 holonomy. Yes.
So you checked all three of these. You checked them also. You checked all three of these for all the YPQs in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, for instance, in the case that it's considered the Y21 case, the delta is a 1,
yes.
Where there shouldn't be a geometric a deformation from sort of generic arguments, mathematical arguments, how does this...
Okay, so I actually thought that you were going to talk about that, but the answer is very... So I was very puzzled. Okay, no, I was very puzzled too, but I did check my calculation several times. So there's a, if you go to this paper of Altman's and you try to check, so what he has is a system of equation that tells you an obstruction to deformation at different levels, okay? So it turns out that in general, they all admit first order deformation and higher order are sort of obstructed.
How is this first order exactly, your calculation
then? So it is first order because all I'm doing is I linearize this condition. Okay, so I would need to go to higher orders if I'm interested in higher orders. Okay, so that actually my puzzle was maybe this is not, maybe it's just that I didn't know better, but roughly any argument that tells me, so most of the classification of deformations are based in some map between some solutions to some equation and forms, just like I did here very explicitly. Now, because usually this came from a nonlinear equation by linearizing. So you would think that all questions about obstruction or allowing deformation is necessarily an infinitesimal kind of deformation, right? So that was one thing that was not completely clear to me. But it seems, though I don't completely understand the paper fully, I can use the results, etc., in the case of this Gorenstein toric singularities, there's a different machinery that allows you to also classify, but not in this standard way where you relate it to cohomology, which I think is by definition very a linear problem.
Actually, I'll be talking exactly about that way of doing it. Okay.
Yes. Before you said that if you turn on a finite volume for the 3 cycle, you cannot turn on a finite volume also for another 2 cycle. So
I didn't say that. And for the conifold, by the way, you can do both. You can have.
You cannot do it at the same time.
Yeah, you can do it at the same time.
You can do it at the same time?
Right. There's this resolved deformed conifold that Minassian and friends wrote down that it explains a problem with baryonic symmetries in the standard Kleonov-Strassler background.
This is the baryonic branch.
Yeah.
It's not Calabi-Yau.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's generalized Calabi-Yau. I mean, it has some flux. It's
any question? So this 2,1 form induced from this metric perturbation, is that the same 2,1 form that you get?
No, it's not that. I mean, it's... All I do is this one. All I can construct explicitly. So I have this. I just have to. This is also known. So I just compute it very explicitly. And it is not that one. No. Okay. So then one basically can construct the solution. Basically. You know, you want to construct G3 to the next order, the metric, etc. And this is all possible. There's the question, of course, that we were just discussing, and this is one, I think, one of the really important problems in this area, that it looks like this way of constructing theories, you need to relax supersymmetry somehow. So essentially, in part, supersymmetry is related to this preserving this Calabi-Yau condition, the way it is. So
you started by saying that the U and R is open.
Yes.
Can you show it already now?
Sorry.
Where would you see?
Right. So sorry. So here you should see it because this E1, E3. So if I had E1 squared plus E4, E3 squared plus E4 squared, I would definitely have no dependence on psi. But because the solution is of this type, it contains psi very explicitly.
So this HMN is related to the delta G?
Sorry. There's some more details here that one can... But I don't think that they are very illuminating at this point. But essentially, I want to.
Another question.
Sure.
Can you see a subgroup of U1R which is preserved?
A subgroup of U1R which is preserved. You expect a Z2P subgroup to be preserved, right? Or so for SUN, it should be Z2N, right? Is that what you're asking?
That's the normal Hadamard symmetry breaking.
Well, it's a product gate group, so it's not. What you were saying now was for a single gate group with no flavors. But I don't know what it's for. I'm just asking.
No, I did not look at that.
I have to think.
So I want to. I mean, this part unfortunately concludes a little bit. So there. I would just write 2 points about. So the conclusion here is that, so there's also, okay, so probably, let me write it like this. The full solution is not supersymmetric. Okay, and then there's a lot of evidence that have been. I have a lot of reservation about the field theory work that has been done, but that is a separate issue that I hope we'll discuss here. But there's a basically there are gauge theory arguments and also algebraic geometry arguments that such at least in the way that I was presenting here, such solution should not exist, which we should interpret more properly, I would think, to say that the solution either is not supersymmetric, okay, which is a very conservative statement, or it could also be that the solution has really SU3 structure rather than SU3 holonomy. And there's this example that we just mentioned of a solution that is really not SU3 holonomy, but it is still supersymmetric and describes more generally the baryonic branch of Clevenus-Strassmann.
That solution, did it count the number of degrees of freedom? Was there a mention of
Newton's
string theory?
No, not really, no.
But the dilaton is not constant anymore, I guess.
No.
Do you know what happens to the volume of the
Sasaki
Einstein? How does it change?
This is not for Sasaki Einstein. This is just for T11, for the coniform.
Okay, so for T11, what do you know how it
has, so it becomes something like this. Okay, so both the S2 and the S3 have non-zero volume at the base, which is resolved deformed coniform, if you will. Okay. So this is more or less what I wanted to tell you about this sort of approach of generalizing, of trying to find confining theories. But since I have like 10 more minutes, I'll tell you about something that is... So I'll tell you about a possible alternative way of trying to find some confining theories, starting with these quivers. So this is not completed. This is something that I sort of started thinking about and asking Ami and Sergio. But I think it's interesting, and more importantly, I think it's pretty universal. So if you notice, when it boils down to construct the actual solution here, you need to know a lot about 2 cycles, 3 cycles. You need to go into the structure of the manifold. It is no longer a general statement that you can make that will help you. So you really have to get your hands dirty in that sense. And therefore, it's very non-universal. Okay. So it would be nice to have something slightly more general. Okay. Something that doesn't have to go into the very specific properties of the manifold. So let me start by some fact. Okay. And then I will tell you how one can think of exploiting that fact and what we have looked and things like that. So one of the things that has been central in our consideration, so were metrics of this type. Okay. And you have R squared here. And here you have a four-dimensional space, which is Keller-Einstein. Okay, so if this is Keller-Einstein, this can be this five-dimensional part, can be this Sasaki-Einstein. That there are many examples now: S5, T11, YPQ, FPQRL, FPQR. And then I just have a cone, and this cone is Ricci flat, and it's also Calabi-Yau. But there's another solution that has the same properties. So I can put a minus one here and A here, and leave that. And with A being 1 minus B to the 6 divided by R to the 6, this also have the same properties. It is Calabi-Yau, has a very explicit Keller form. And so And I didn't need to know anything about this, anything more than what I need to know to form the conformal field theory. Right? So basically, what we have to do now is to understand what does this mean. If this creates a singularity for you, then this is a simpler way to modify the theories. And again, I modified the whole class in one go.
Is it the singular Calabian?
This is the okay, good question. So let me answer that question. So is this singular or regular? Is this allowed? So obviously, locally, this is completely allowed. So I can just compute our curvature, and I see that it is zero. It's a local computation, and it depends on precisely these properties that I mentioned: that this is Keller-Einstein, that this sigma is such, that this sigma is twice the Keller form on this space, so it all checks. But I have global issues, okay? And this is where I'm going to. And this is where when you have to look a little bit more careful. So, what you want to do? So, as you can see, R, the range of R now goes from B to infinity. So you need to worry about what's going on close to B. And what you do is just this standard computation that you do for black holes, for example. You redefine the radius, and then you want to make sure that this gives you some R2. And that will fix some periodicity of psi. Okay? So that tells me in particular that S5 will be singular unless I divide it by C3. And similarly, it tells me that T11 would also be singular unless I divide it by C2. But once I did, I took this question, I'm fine. It's a completely regular thing. And now, if you remember what I was telling you about the general structure of brains, so really to construct a brain solution, what I needed was everything boiled down to something like this. And I also have to find the Laplacian on H. Okay?
Do you know what will happen if you will take the suspended field point?
Well? Yeah, I mean, right. So I was looking into YPQ, but this now I have to be a little bit more careful because so there are these regular, but this applies to that case.
Another example is S5 mod Z2 cos Z2.
No, that would be singular, and I can tell you. So in S5, this is CP2, so the periodicity of this is 6 pi, and if at the end you want this to be R2, you have to mod out by C3, and that's the only one. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, not even G5?
No. If there's only one quotient that will give you the regular metric there. Okay, so essentially, so you're done now. You have a solution that you constructed essentially by looking at all these quivers and taking this deformation. So now what do you want to do is to... So you want to understand what is it that you're doing. In language, in terms of ADS. So in terms of ADS, what we know is that we take whatever deformation we had and we linearize it, and then we expect to have something like delta minus 4 with some coefficient or delta minus del with the coefficient. That would tell me what operator is going on, what's going on. So what happens, again, this needs to be studied better in, I don't think that case by case, I don't think that is completely case by case, but you have to be careful with the quotient. But roughly, this is you will get an operator of dimension 6. And the guess, okay, this is very, this is still very suggestive, is that we have a non-zero f for an operator of that type, at least for n equal 4, where I know the quotient and I know what mode corresponds to what. And so then you can go and see whether this theory... So then you can study some of the properties of the theories and try to understand why what does this non-zero wave mean in the field theory, and try to do analysis. But all I wanted to say is that so there is a concrete approach here where essentially what you're doing is blowing up some force cycle, and that gives you a theory that just by following the Wilson loop calculation will give you a theory that is confining. By studying ADS, we understand roughly what is the general form of the deformation that we're doing in the field theory. And this, what I like about this in particular is that it's very generic. So I don't really need to know exactly about two cycles inside here. And it could have other problems, but this is an alternative. And in general, I just want to finish. In general, I think that one should try to understand the formation of the theories in a more general way, and perhaps one of them will tell us what the confining theories starting from quivers is.
What is the volume of the full cycle that you mentioned?
The volume is B, right? Because now R goes from B. So R goes to B. This becomes an R2 if I mod it out appropriately. And this is B. Yes?
Maybe this is a silly question, but how is this different than just overfolding if you end up getting modding up by like a group that
is? How is this? So here you're giving a BEF to some concrete operator. Okay, well, or before then you are not doing that. You're just singling out some particular class.
Are you only restricting the two cases, S5 mod Z3 and T11 mod Z2?
No, as I said. So I... These are two cases that I just cited, but in general, for YPQ, you have to move by some, I don't want to say a number because, but I'm not completely sure, okay, but by some number, let me put it K. And it's not for all YPQ, but for certain YPQ that you can do it.
Okay, so the Calabia, which is associated to YPQ, would have more than one full cycle, generically. It would have A minus one full cycles.
Okay.
And you're saying that there is a certain full cycle which has non-zero size. Do you know which one of them is the linear combination or?
No, if you're asking me if I know in the toric diagram which is the point that corresponds to a full cycle, that I don't know in general, okay.
I think you're treating them all of the same in the same way.
You want to give?
Because you're not touching the base. So if you want to treat one of with different in a different way with respect to the other one, you have to touch the base. But here or not. I don't know if this is a smooth space. When you put D3 brain in a smooth space in the IR, you should get them conformed. You shouldn't get a confining field theory.
In the infrared?
Yeah. Near the brain.
No, okay. So the way that I see confinement here is more or less like this, very generic. So if I ask an operator with some non-zero BEF, generically it will generate mass through loop effects to most of the other fields.
Most, but it will get any more power at the end, I guess. That's because it is a smooth space.
He's claiming that there is a BEF, which is kind of... But you're saying that this one, the four Fermi operator has zero web and the two Fermi has zero web?
Okay, so it could be that other operators have non-zero web, but this is a specific one that I can read off by looking at some dimension 6 operator going to N equal 4 and comparing the modes that's been turned on with this R to the minus delta with the operator that it corresponds to.
Okay, let's thank you.